during perhaps the most unconventional presidential race in recent history, perhaps we can take some comfort in a good old-fashioned TV ad buy. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Donald Trump's presidential campaign has launched its first TV ad of the general election. The 30-second spot is airing in four states, including Pennsylvania, where polls show Hillary Clinton with a comfortable lead. It's all about keeping the country safe, how Democrat Clinton supposedly won't.
Syrian refugees flood in. Illegal immigrants convicted of committing crimes get to stay, collecting Social Security benefits, skipping the line. Our border open, it's more of the same, but worse.
And how Republican Trump will.
Terrorists and dangerous criminals kept out. The border secure, our families safe. Change that makes America safe again.
Meanwhile, Clinton has been running ads here since the DNC, including this one in which children watch some of Trump's more outlandish remarks on TV.
I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and I wouldn't lose any voters, okay?
And you can tell them to go themselves.
A recent Quinnipiac University poll of likely Pennsylvania voters finds Clinton with a 10 percentage point lead over Trump, 52 to 42. Pennsylvania has a long history as an important swing state in presidential elections, but over the past decade or so, political shifts have kept the state swinging left again and again. Republicans haven't won the Keystone State since 1988. Nevertheless, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton are fighting hard for Pennsylvania votes this year. Katie Meyer reports on what it's going to take to win.
According to Chris Borick, a political science professor at Muhlenberg College, Pennsylvania has been like fool's gold for Republicans in recent years. Tantalizing, but just out of reach.
You know, one of the great disadvantages for Republicans is the gap in registered voters. There's almost a million more Democrats in the state than Republicans in terms of registered voter status. That means if Democrats get out their voters, they're going to do well.
That's led recent GOP candidates to largely ignore the state.
The last time a Republican really fought here was in 2004, when President Bush spent a lot of time, a lot of money in the state, and actually made it a very close race. John Kerry won by 2 points.
But Borick says these next few months in Pennsylvania will look a lot like 2004 did. Trump sees the Keystone State as a must-win, so he's campaigning hard. And he's expressed confidence in his chances.
The only way we can lose, in my opinion, I really mean this, Pennsylvania, is if cheating goes on. I really believe it.
But for all Trump's focus on the state, the race might still be a wash for the GOP. That's largely because Trump polls badly with voters from the Philadelphia suburbs. And as Borick says, those are the people who swing the state.
Places like Montgomery County, Bucks County, Delaware County, Chester County, those counties have been key in really determining which candidates will win Pennsylvania statewide races.
The way Pennsylvania breaks down demographically, liberal voters dominate Philly and Pittsburgh, and conservatives are concentrated in the T-shaped region across the top and down the middle of the state. Voters in the Philly suburbs tend to be fiscally conservative but socially liberal, and they oscillate between voting Democrat and Republican. But in a recent state poll, Clinton's up 40% in southeastern Pennsylvania, and she's been concentrating her campaign there, too.
This is the most consequential election. The stakes could not be higher. And we want everybody in Philadelphia, everybody across Pennsylvania, to be part of a great victory.
Trump, on the other hand, has a plan that largely ignores the Philadelphia region, instead trying to appeal to a specific demographic across the state.
This is going to be an election of unlikely voters. You know, people who have not voted in some time, who have feel they've been left behind, and are coming back because of Donald Trump.
That's Lou Barletta, a Pennsylvania Republican congressman and Trump surrogate. He's campaigned extensively with Trump and says polls that show the candidate down by 9 or more points in the state don't accurately reflect the voters who will turn out.
Actually, I think it's a lot better than what the polling is showing. I'm sensing on the ground an energy like I haven't seen in a long time, and certainly much more than what we're seeing with Hillary Clinton.
Borick agrees Trump tends to appeal to infrequent voters, but he says concentrating resources on that demographic isn't guaranteed to pay off.
Lots of candidates have gone down the path of saying they're going to be different in terms of bringing out voters that don't usually turn out. It's a big risk. There's a reason that campaigns spend a lot of time going after voters that show up, because they're the ones that ultimately are going to decide the election.
With Clinton leading comfortably in state polls, one pro-Clinton super PAC recently paused its TV ads in Pennsylvania, a show of confidence. Borick says the race isn't at all a done deal yet, but it's looking more and more like Trump's got a tough uphill road ahead of him. Katie Meyer in Harrisburg.
Now, 80 days out from November 8th, and Donald Trump is warning that it's going to be a rigged election. Let's go to the polls with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
Frank, Donald Trump is urging his supporters to serve as poll watchers. To what extent do Americans feel that this is going to be a rigged election?
Well, we didn't use the word rigged, but we have a question we just asked, which is how confident are you that at the voting facility where you vote, the votes will be accurately cast and counted in this year's election? And 81% of Americans say they are at least somewhat confident. The majority are very confident, as a matter of fact. And there's not a lot of difference between Republicans and Democrats on that. And this number is about in the range where we have found it several years ago when we asked it about in the context of other elections. Now, we do ask the same question, Dave, about generally across the country, will votes be accurately cast? And then we're down to 62% who are confident. And there's a big difference by party there. Just half of Republicans say votes will be accurately counted nationwide, and three-quarters of Democrats say that. So Trump is tapping into something there, because Republicans clearly are more skeptical about votes being cast accurately than are Democrats.
What's the nature of the concern?
You know, there are two possible sides to this coin. One is that eligible voters are not being allowed to cast a vote, and the other is that votes are being cast by people who, by law, are not eligible to vote, and we ask about both of them. Generally speaking, across the entire population, Dave, a concern is about the same on both of those, but there are big partisan differences. The biggest difference comes in when we ask about votes being cast by people who, by law, are not eligible to vote. 53% of Republicans say that's a major problem, but only 24% of Democrats say that's a major problem. So big partisan difference there. And when we look at it the other way, there's not as much difference. Republicans and Democrats are about the same. Democrats are a little more likely to say that eligible voters are being restrained from being able to vote. But the big difference comes in that first one I'm talking about, which is people voting who shouldn't be. That's where the partisan rift, it really appears biggest in the data.
Do Americans offer solutions?
Americans favor almost anything we put in front of them, which is interesting in and of itself. Early voting, 80%, so they favor that. What about photo ID? Now, that's been very controversial, requiring all voters to provide photo identification at their voting place in order to vote. 80% of Americans say that's a good idea. So actually, there's bipartisan support for that. And automatic voting registration, say at the Department of Motor Vehicles and things like that, 63% of Americans favor that. So a lot of these things that have been proposed by both sides are approved by the average American.
Frank, to what extent has there been a post-convention shift in party identification?
Prior to the two conventions in early July, there was a +7 Democratic edge on party ID. That is, more Americans identified as Democrats or lean that way than as Republicans. During the Republican convention, it actually dropped where there was a 1-point edge for Republicans. More Americans were identifying as Republicans during the Republican convention and right after it than identified as Democrats. So it shifted. But now we've been tracking it after the conventions. It's back to a +8 Democratic identification. That is, by 8 percentage points, more Americans identify as Democrats than Republicans. So any bounce that the Republican Party overall got from the conventions has dissipated. And the reason I say all of that is that less than half of Republicans, and this is important, less than half of Republicans, just about 46%, say they are satisfied that Donald Trump is their party's nominee. That means over half say they wish somebody else was their party's nominee. So there's a lot of disgruntlement in the GOP base with Trump being the party's nominee. Now, Clinton doesn't do a lot better, but she's got 56% of Democrats who say they are happy that she is their nominee. About 40% say they are not. And a lot of those are young people who, we think, looking at the data, are still pining away for Bernie Sanders, wish he was the nominee.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup poll. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight. Still ahead, who knew a sitcom about four seniors living together could be a hit?
They didn't never left their house, but they changed six or seven times a day into these amazing, like, couture outfits, and you always wondered what they did all day.
The Golden Girls are back on stage in Philadelphia. Answers when NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Hot dogs as the great American equalizer.
Nathan's was a place for the common man. It was a place for the celebrity. Didn't matter who you were, you all mingled in that place.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, Coney Island's Nathan's Famous, from our series Summer, brought to you by. We'll have the rest of today's business news and the numbers from Wall Street as well next time on Marketplace.
Marketplace follows NewsWorks Tonight at 6:30 this evening on WHYY.
Support for WHYY comes from Virtua and Penn Medicine, now partners in the fight against cancer. Today, Penn and Virtua specialists are collaborating to bring everyone in South Jersey access to the latest clinical trials, advanced research, and treatment options personalized to the genetic level. Together, they're opening a doorway that's helping to bring the cure for cancer within reach. Information on Virtua and Penn Medicine's partnership at virtua.org/pennmedicine.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Former Philadelphia Police Commissioner Charles Ramsey is a hot topic in the race for mayor in Wilmington, Delaware. Ramsey's consulting work with the Wilmington Police is being called into question by candidates hoping to unseat incumbent Mayor Dennis Wilson. WHYY's Mark Eichmann reports.
In January, just a few weeks after retiring in Philadelphia, Charles Ramsey signed a $112,000 contract to work as a public safety consultant for the Wilmington Police Department. Part of that work involved implementing recommendations of President Obama's 21st Century Policing Task Force. In the months since, Mayor Dennis Williams' decision to bring Ramsey in has drawn criticism from his political opponents. That criticism was voiced earlier this week during a WHYY-sponsored debate featuring all eight candidates running for mayor. City Council President Theo Gregory was asked if he would continue the relationship with Ramsey if he were elected.
Your question assumes that I would know what Chief Ramsey does. So I don't know what Chief Ramsey does, so I can't answer that question that way.
Former Wilmington City Councilman Kevin Kelly, who was leading the most recent poll for mayor, said he would not continue a relationship with Ramsey.
I've seen Chief Ramsey one time at a public safety committee meeting when he came into town, and that's the last time I've ever seen him. And you could ask anyone in this audience to raise their hand who's seen him, and I'll bet you get less than 10 people.
But Wilmington Police Chief Bobby Cummings says there's a reason Kelly and the others haven't seen Ramsey.
They haven't been in the places where I've been, where we've been meeting. He was brought here to consult with me and not them. So he was consulting on police matters, not political matters.
Chief Cummings says he's met with Ramsey in person in Wilmington too many times to count. He says they talk weekly about Wilmington police matters. Candidate Mike Przycki, though, questioned what the city got for the money spent to bring Ramsey to Wilmington.
The public has a tough time understanding how we can spend $120,000 for no results.
Chief Cummings says the money was, quote, absolutely well spent.
We've gotten his expertise on matters as it relates to policing and a number of investigative functions and what the focus should be as it relates to crime in the city.
While Ramsey's contract is up at the end of the month, there's no doubt crime will remain the main issue in the mayor's race. Wilmington voters will pick their next mayor in the September 13th Democratic primary vote. No Republicans are running. From the Delaware Desk, I'm Mark Eichmann, WHYY News.
A group of drag queens in Philadelphia will perform episodes of the old TV show The Golden Girls live on stage this evening. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports that the sitcom from the 1980s is ripe for a cross-dressing spoof.
The Golden Girls ran for seven seasons between 1985 and 1992. That is when women's fashions, particularly for older women, tended towards shoulder pads and chiffon jackets in pastel colors. Ian Morrison, a drag queen known as Brittany Lynn, says it's pretty much already a drag show.
So Bea Arthur looked like she was wearing football equipment under her outfits because they always had like the broad shoulders, long flowing outfits. It screamed like, you know, older extravagance because they didn't never left their house, but they changed six or seven times a day into these amazing like couture outfits, and you always wondered what they did all day.
Morrison is not the first to see the drag potential of the Golden Girls. There have been other comedy stage shows based on the sitcom around the country. Morrison is the manager of a gay sports bar in Philadelphia called Taboo and a longtime performer himself. He says the show will recreate two episodes of the Golden Girls, off of which the performers will be free to improvise because it's funnier that way.
But at the same time, I'm scared to hear what comes out of everybody's mouth.
This Golden Girls show is the first of a planned series of performances based on old TV shows. There will be a reprieve of Golden Girls in October, followed by episodes of The Facts of Life. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
Middle and high school students hear a lot about so-called STEM education. STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, and it's regarded as a critical educational component for success in college and the job market. 14-year-old Calvin Bell agrees, but not just because STEM education could lead to a career as a chemist or a computer programmer. He thinks the benefits are much more widespread.
This summer, I was chosen to participate in the Envision National Youth Leadership Forum, Explore STEM program. The program focuses on the core subjects of robotics, environmental science, video game design, and medicine. I think that it's a huge opportunity for many students my age. This is an opportunity for students to invest in their intelligence and to their future, no matter their desired career path. When I graduate from high school, I want to study at an Ivy League school, become a lawyer, and then a politician. Some people may not understand what STEM has to do with law and politics, but I have an answer. Science helps the human brain think strategically. I will be able to look at world problems like renewable energy, global warming, and solutions within the educational system in a different way than typical politicians or lawyers. I see science as a fun hobby. It's a way for me to get my hands dirty and learn something new. And I can be creative and collaborative with others because science is not always an individual sport, but more so a team sport. I use the word sport because science can be competitive, where people strive for knowledge and want to be the first to discover something new. One of my earliest experiences with science was a fourth grade science fair. It was the first time that my fellow students were able to take over and create a project on their own. For my project, I wanted to see if an egg would crack when dropped with protection or without protection. I created an instructional video and was elated when I won the science fair for my grade. Since then, I have enjoyed astronomy, learning about the astronomical bodies that make up our galaxy, which I thought was really cool. I also enjoyed archaeology, because I have always liked getting my hands dirty and discovering what our world looked like for early man. Now I am creating a self-powered bird feeder with LED lights that will turn off when it's empty, and I am studying how adults and children memorize things. I believe that it is important for children my age to learn how science affects and explains their everyday lives. Science shows us the way towards creative solutions to real-world problems, how to help people who have been affected by natural or toxic disasters, such as the water crisis in Flint, Michigan. Overall, if I had any advice for students my age, I would say, follow your dreams and never give up. No matter the obstacles or barriers, you will still overcome them and make a difference for your life. Be the difference you want to see in the world. Whether you become a scientist, a lawyer, a reporter, a doctor, or anything else, because there is a job to do and conquer. I am Calvin Bell III.
14-year-old Calvin Bell is a graduate of the City School. It's a private Christian school in Philadelphia. And this fall, he'll be a freshman at Morristown Friends School in Morristown, New Jersey. From there, Calvin, the sky's the limit. Finally this week, it's an exoneration of sorts for Phillies slugger Ryan Howard. Late last year, Howard was implicated, along with the Washington Nationals' Ryan Zimmerman, of using performance-enhancing drugs in an Al Jazeera America documentary called The Dark Side. Howard, in turn, filed a lawsuit against Al Jazeera. At the same time, Major League Baseball launched its own investigation, and today, the commissioner's office cleared Howard and Zimmerman of any drug violations. The statement reads, quote, both Howard and Zimmerman fully cooperated with the Office of the Commissioner's investigation. Charlie Sly, the man who made the allegations in the documentary, did not cooperate with Major League Baseball. Also implicated in the documentary was reigning Super Bowl champ Peyton Manning. The Phillies kick off a home series this evening against the Cardinals, with Ryan Howard batting fifth. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyakov, Kimberly Haas, Brett Rader, and Ty Johnson. Our news director is Eugene Son. At the helm this week, Al Banks and Adam Staniszewski. John Musoni is acting vice president of news and civic dialogue. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.